You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's being reported that Planned Parenthood is ramping up financially for the midterm elections. A lot of people are, of course. But according to Deidre Schifling, executive director of Planned Parenthood Votes, which is their political arm, the group is beginning with a commitment of $20 million used mostly in Senate and gubernatorial races. It raises a question. What are Planned Parenthood's political goals for the midterms? They're crucial elections in a lot of senses, but what's crucial to Planned Parenthood? Joining us to talk about that and a Washington Post story on children with Down syndrome at the center of the abortion debate, Carol Tobias, a regular guest and president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. Carol, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me back on.
How would you discern Planned Parenthood's political goals for the midterm elections?
I think they were caught off guard by the 2016 elections. They really thought Hillary Clinton was going to be elected president. And since we have a pro-life president who is doing a lot of damage to the pro-abortion industry, I think they have decided they have to get some ground back. So they are going to focus on, right now they have picked out 8 states that have both gubernatorial and Senate elections, and they are going to do everything they can to flip them. They want some more senators to vote against pro-life measures in the Senate. They want governors to veto pro-life legislation coming through the legislatures. And they're also looking, of course, at having a governor in an important state when redistricting will occur after the 2020 census. There will be a new election in 2020 with the new president. So they have decided that this is the year that they need to really double down and get their game going and get their troops out there to elect pro-abortion candidates for some very critical positions.
How important, as far as you can tell, to Planned Parenthood is the continued federal funding that they get one way or the other from taxpayer dollars to the tune of about $500 million a year?
Well, it's critical. As you said, $500 million, $500 million every year that goes into Planned Parenthood coffers for services that they, you know, say they provide through Medicaid and other programs. They cannot get reimbursed for doing abortions, but they can use that money for a lot of other services, to pay their electric bill, to pay staff, to pay for promotion and advertising. So that money does help to support the abortion industry. So yes, they do not want to lose $500 million. So when they say they're going to spend $20 million on an election, you know, that's almost chump change for them. But they really need to do it because they need to keep abortion legal. That is their primary purpose.
Are we witnessing kind of how it works for Planned Parenthood in politics? They get money from the federal government, and in part, they turn around and they redistribute that money to political races, to candidates that will do their bidding.
That's exactly right. They are supporting pro-abortion Democratic candidates in these gubernatorial and Senate states. The 8 states that they have targeted are Arizona, Florida, Minnesota, Nevada, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. So, you know, if your listeners are living in those states, they need to be aware that Planned Parenthood is going to be coming in heavy to support those candidates who will then, if they get elected, continue to fund Planned Parenthood. So it is a constant cycle. They elect candidates, the candidates turn around and give them money.
Here's the tricky part. Does this mean that we are going to see those candidates that are being funded by Planned Parenthood in those states, both Senate and gubernatorial candidates, are they going to be talking a lot about abortion? Are they going to be talking a lot about their support for Planned Parenthood necessarily?
Some of them might, but most of them will not. What we have seen is that most pro-abortion candidates don't want to talk about it. They will just talk about choice or reproductive health or women's rights. They never talk about abortion, and they certainly are not going to say when they think abortion should be legal, that there should be no limits whatsoever. So it's going to be up to pro-lifers to, I don't want to say badger the candidates, but follow them, and any opportunity that, you know, that we have to ask these candidates, do they think babies who can feel pain should be aborted? Are they okay with arms and legs being torn off of babies, or would they support a ban on dismemberment abortion? It's going to have to be up to us to encourage reporters to get ask those questions and to ask those questions ourselves if we have an opportunity at a, you know, public meeting, a town hall forum, whatever it might be, to get that information out, because the candidates are not going to tell the voters where they really stand on this issue or that they are a strong ally of Planned Parenthood.
Turning to another subject, a Washington Post story with a headline that reads, "Babies with Down Syndrome are put at center stage in the U.S. abortion fight," spinning off a little bit from the pick of the Gerber baby with Down syndrome. Were you surprised by the headline? I mean, if a cursory reading here, if they're talking about the aborting of Down syndrome babies in the womb, that the Washington Post would call them babies?
That is a little unusual. I guess if you want the baby with Down syndrome to get through the pregnancy, he or she is a baby, and if not, then it would become, you know, a fetus or just an inconvenience. But there are four states now that have passed legislation to say that you cannot get an abortion if you have found out that the child would be born with Down syndrome and you don't want a baby with Down syndrome. So it's a very narrow type of legislation, and certainly no one is saying that a baby with Down syndrome is more valuable than a baby with another trisomy disorder. But it's kind of an effort to just make the American public realize that, you know, babies are being killed just because they have something that's a little different than most of the, you know, the rest of us. So it's kind of a PR campaign. And also you see so many people with Down syndrome, but the abortion industry is doing its best to eradicate them. If the baby isn't perfect, then abortion is supposed to be the solution.
The story notes that in Great Britain, where no such laws exist, the abortion rate for children diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb is 90%. Do we have any idea what those numbers are in the U.S.?
It's getting close to that. The estimates I have seen are somewhere between 70 and 90%. Now, Iceland claims that they have eradicated Down syndrome, but instead they have just killed all their babies with Down syndrome. And I think what we really need to focus on, and why this one, I think, helps the abortion argument, is because we do know so many people with Down syndrome in the country. The Centers for Disease Control is saying that it's about, you know, one out of almost every 700 people has Downs. And there's been a great TV show, Born This Way, on A&E, that's, you know, following kids that have been, you know, they're living their lives with Down syndrome. So I think the abortion industry really does want a woman to be able to kill her baby just because there is this kind of, you know, I'll say problem with the baby, although I know those parents who have those children wouldn't say it's a problem at all. But it's just kind of a tough situation in our country where we've got people, you know, walking around with us, and we're looking at them and saying, you should be dead because you have, you know, something different. So we're just kind of trying to highlight that in various pieces of legislation to let people know that these are special kids that deserve as much love and attention, and they certainly deserve life as the rest of us.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, these laws are unenforceable and that they violate medical privacy?
They may be unenforceable. If a woman says, I don't want my baby because she has Down syndrome, she can go to the abortionist and say, you know, my husband encouraged me to get the abortion, or my boyfriend said he's going to leave me, or my parents are pushing me to do it, or I just don't want this baby. She doesn't have to say what the real reason is for getting that abortion. So it is very hard to enforce the law, but it's a public awareness effort to let people know that just because someone is different doesn't make them less of a human being, and they have as much right to be here as anyone else.
Carol Tobias is president of National Right to Life based in Washington, D.C. Learn more about their work under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Carol, thank you very much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about the 2018 Academy Awards, the Oscars. Many people didn't realize they were even being held. Maybe if you were flipping through channels the other night, you might have found them by accident. Were there any surprises? And how did the 2018 Oscars, how did they navigate all of the social justice issues that they're trying to balance all at one time in a three-hour ceremony? Pastor Ted Geese joins us to talk about the Academy Awards right after this. How did Christian communities in the past respond to godless cultures? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is titled Embracing Godly Character, The Christian Community's Response to a Godless Culture. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about Embracing Godly Character at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Embracing Godly Character, 1-800-325-3040.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
The grace of God, the church's music, the Lord's Supper every service every Sunday, preaching Christ crucified and risen, our hope for years to come, there is hope in St. Louis, Hope Lutheran Church, that is, 5218 Neosho Street, St. Louis, Missouri. Find us on the web at hopelutheranstl.org.